Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie, the van insurance specialists.
On Dublin's Sunshine 106.8.
Ken Doherty.
And now it's going to be the World Championship for Stephen Roach, is the champion of the world.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, we have another full show for you again this morning. Ken will be joining us from Sheffield to discuss what has been an absolutely incredible 48 hours of snooker with both semi-finals going down to the wire. Ronnie O'Sullivan versus Kyron Wilson is this year's final and Ken will give us his prediction for that. And our sporting moment this year is one for our older listeners as we remember Eamon Coughlin and the 37th anniversary of his 1983 5,000 metre win in the World Championships. Bernard Flynn will be on Talking GAA and we're going to discuss his Irish Daily Mirror article on how money is running out for many of the counties and what that means for the teams and management of those counties. And Alan Cawley will discuss the League of Ireland and, of course, that dramatic thrashing by Bayern Munich last night of Barcelona. An incredible result. But as always, we want to hear from you and you can contact us by getting in touch with the show on text message, which is 087 11 55 777. And of course, don't forget we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Time now to turn our attention to the papers and delighted to be joined this week by a new voice in our producer, Blaine O'Hara. Good morning, Blaine. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you getting on?
Getting on great, thanks. It's good. A little bit strange at the moment where it feels to me like we're in sort of in limbo somewhat with all the counties locked down around. Talk this morning of Tipperary and another outbreak down there. Sport on hold in some places. Sport going on fantastically in other spaces. So, I don't know. It just feels a little bit like we're on a knife edge, doesn't it?
It is a strange one, absolutely. I think we obviously the government have to be looking at, you know, the different outbreaks and all that, but and it can feel kind of a bit, you know, a little bit bad on some counties that obviously have to go into lockdown and they can't train, they can't get prepared for you know, the upcoming competitions that are going to be played in the next few months, and it is quite tough, obviously. But I know, like, it's all that we're doing at the moment, and it's the best we're doing for our health.
Yeah, it feels in sport certainly that we're just kind of. It probably is that we're just trying to get through some form of the sport that we know, but it's not the real thing. It doesn't feel like the real thing at the moment. I know certainly we'll be discussing rugby a little bit later on in the show, but certainly rugby is due to come back next week. And already there's been chat of an outbreak in, not an outbreak, but a case. There's been a positive case in the academy system in Munster, which is of real concern, obviously. So all of the contact tracing and checks are being done around that, but it certainly feels like sport is just kind of clinging on at the moment, and we're just trying to do it as much for our mental health as our physical health.
Absolutely. And we'll be chatting about the some of the protocols that is in the English Premiership rugby at the moment, which will be fun to talk about.
Yeah, we certainly will. Well, look, last night, I suppose we've got to start. Well, there's so much happening. We're going to be talking to Ken about the snooker. That was some of the most dramatic stuff I've ever seen in my life over the last couple of days in both of those semi-finals. But Ken will give us more of the detail on it. But last night as well, Bayern Munich. I mean, I suppose shock is the way everybody's greeting it this morning. I mean, the people were talking about that famous Brazil match, you know, where they got hammered. And to see Barcelona fall away so badly, 8-2 against Bayern Munich. Now, Bayern Munich are an amazing team, but it's unbelievable.
Oh, it's such a shock. And it almost like when I watched I obviously watched the game yesterday and I just thought it looked like a training ground game. It looked like Barcelona literally just, they were coming out to, obviously they were coming out to play, they were, but it just looked like Bayern Munich.
I don't know, were they coming out to play the way they were going on? I mean, you have to wonder, like, the heads just seemed to disappear and they just seemed to, I don't know, how, you know, I don't know, the atmosphere, is that part of it? I can't get how a team like that, look, when you look at the team list, when you look at the names that were on it, the superstars, they just didn't show up. And I mean, how can that be the case in such an event?
Exactly. They weren't even playing their second-rated team and all that. And you're just very surprised to see, you know, Barcelona losing by that much. And I think, Reg, it's the thing about it is that they've been like this for the last few years. Like, you look at last year when they took a fantastic lead into Anfield in the semi-finals. And everyone was expecting, you know, Barcelona is 100% going to win this second leg comfortably, no problem whatsoever. And they completely capitulated. Like, I don't understand, like, what was happening. And I thought, you know, okay, there was a little blip in the system there. They're going to come back next year. They're going to come back stronger. Obviously, coronavirus happened and all. And, you know, the quarterfinals, semifinals and finals were condensed down to one leg and that was it. But when you look at it, I can't even think that the new system, the no fans, the only one match, this isn't the issue. Because if you look at it, if that was the one game that they played and they were going into a second leg, they would be going into a second leg 8-2 down on aggregate.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, it's funny, I'm on a WhatsApp group and it was part of the discussion last night in great detail with Barca and the way the club seemed to have just fallen away, a lack of succession planning, Messi running the show, sticking with people like Suarez and Pique and, you know, not just that there doesn't seem to be any sort of plan in place and you know, owned by the shareholders, and it just seems like a very messy situation. One of them was even saying to me in the message last night that they'd visited the stadium and like there is definitely flaws there. It looks old, it looks, you know, needs to be done up a little bit, and the history that it has is incredible, and it just seems weird that they've fallen away so much.
I think they're gripping onto the past. When you look at that team, I think on average they're saying that the average age is in the very high 20s. Their team is not going through a brand new you know, rebuild. They're just hanging on to those huge names, as you say, like Pique, like, well, obviously Messi and all that, but like Suarez and all that. They need to start thinking about the future. They need to start rebuilding. And I think it comes all the way up from the very top.
Well, I suppose the other thing to say, and you've got to emphasise it, is Bayern Munich, what a team. Like, what a performance from them. And it's very hard to see them being beaten now. I don't see, like, I know City are playing Lyon, and they've a bit to go yet, but you kind of fancy them in that. But you just don't see City getting the better of Bayern if it comes to that.
No, Bayern are just a powerhouse. They are. It seems like they just never stop. They've got like their second little engine they do in the last 25 minutes. And it's just phenomenal, is to see. And I know City have, from the very beginning, they've been odds on favour to win this. But
yeah, I wouldn't agree. I'd say that's changed. I haven't looked at the prices now, but I'd say that has definitely changed after last night. Bayern have to be the favourites. City, they won't have Aguero for their quarterfinal against Lyon. He's injured.
That's going to be very, very tough. You look at Aguero, and Aguero's a game changer, he is. I know he has been injured, he has, for a good bit of the season, but he is a game changer. And that's the thing, is you would always call on Aguero to change the game for you. And if it wasn't going your way, and I feel like this is going to be a huge, huge problem for City. And I know they're playing Lyon, but I still think without Aguero, you don't have that little gem in him to change the game, and it's going to be very, very tough for City. I'm going to throw it out there. I think it's going to be quite close tonight.
It probably will be. Aguero, of course, getting surgery on a knee in June. Pep feels that if they do make the final, he'll be fit for it. So I suppose it's a race against time, but they do have to get to that final. Arsenal signed Willian.
That's
so,
it.
Not a bad thing for me.
Not a bad thing for me either, Reg. it's a good player that they signed. Very, very good. Well, I mean, yeah, when you look at it, you're taking a rival player. You're getting him on a free, and as well, 3-year deal. I know his wages are high, and that is one thing that there have been a lot of comments about, the fact that his wages are high, obviously after the news about last week when 55 of our staff got let off. But honestly, I see it as a very big plus. I think Mikel Arteta, he's being smart, and I have heard stories that he's not going to play him on, well, he's thinking about playing centrally rather than wide, because of the amount of wide players that we have. We've got Pepe, we've got Saka, we've got all of those young players coming up. I feel like Willian could potentially
slot into that area. And God knows we need it, there's no doubt about it.
Yep.
No, it's we need new blood. I think probably from his point of view as well, you know, when you've had a bad run in a place and things aren't going well, you'd probably want to go and take a fresh start and make an impression again and show people what you're made of. So he should come with the right attitude as well. So I'm hoping that's going to be the case, because we could do it a bit of a lift.
Absolutely, we definitely could.
Yeah, so we've come closer to home now. Dundalk, still no win in their last three games in the Premier Division.
Yeah, ever since they come back, they just look completely different, don't they? They just, they're without a win now since coming back. And even you look at that game yesterday, and you're thinking to yourself, how, like, being 2-0 down to Waterford, and then literally in the last minute, claiming one point to share, like, you're sharing the points, you are. I don't see any positivity in that. It's looking very, very, very bad for them at the moment. They really have to get back on form to try and, you know, challenge for the title again.
And it really was, like, they left it so late. Hoban in the 84th and Cleary in the 91st minute. You know, It shows great character for them to come back in that sense, but I'm sure Alan will have more insight into that for us. But you know, that was another surprise result, as they say. Cork managing to get the result, 3-0, of course, against Sligo Rovers earlier, and that was something that they certainly needed. And there's plenty, there's other games cancelled across, so there's plenty to discuss in that League of Ireland with Alan a little bit later on. What else have we got there?
We've got the snooker, and I know we're going to chat to Ken about the snooker, but I think we have to kind of mention just a little bit about it anyway. Just what a phenomenal semi-final. Tee it up, exactly. Get excited for Ken to chat about it. But absolutely, what a semi-final. What a semi-final, and especially in the first game there between Kyron Wilson
and McGill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like the last frame, what was it? It took 50 minutes to play the final frame.
They were just... there was nerves there. He could tell that pressure was starting to get to the players as well. But my God, what a nail biter! And Kyron Wilson, I mean, he's been knocking around for a while, knocking on the door for a long while, and a real sensation. I suppose the question is, and this is what I'll be putting to Ken: is can he rattle Ronnie? Can he get over the enigma that is Ronnie O'Sullivan? I mean, again, he couldn't go through the semi-final without creating some sort of controversy, and we'll talk to Ken about the reaction from Mark Selby to some of the shots that Ronnie took. And as he said himself, Mark Selby, quote, lack of respect for him and for the game. So that's a pretty big statement, you know. I'm not quite sure I fully get it, and I'll talk to Ken in more detail about that myself. I heard Ronnie talking about it. What they were talking about really was that there was a safety shot where Ronnie was snookered, and instead of the usual five or six attempts at trying to get out of it and playing it slowly and, you know, trying to work out the angles and everything else, Ronnie just got down and lashed the ball out of it. He's, as he said himself, it was a hit and hope. It was a go for a fluke. If I hit it, I hit it. If I don't, I don't. But I'm not going back five or six times to try and, you know, have the ball re-spotted again and put back, and the referee says, I don't have time for all that rubbish. You know, so he's basically willing to forfeit the frame and get on to the next one and just get on with it. Now, at a point where you're 16, 14, you know, you're kind of saying, well, maybe not. You might have thought about it a little bit more. So he does spark controversy, but it doesn't matter. You cannot deny his genius, because he went into a great start in that game at the very beginning. Some people were saying that, you know, he might regret not closing out a few more frames, and then he came right back and stormed into a lead, and then he lost that back. Selby was magnificent. It was just a tit-for-tat match like you've never seen, and for it to end up the way it did, and for Ronnie to come out on top, you know, it's just amazing. It really is.
Yeah, he's playing mind games at the moment, he is, though, and he knows what he's doing.
Well, I think so. I think there's a little bit of that involved. But as he says himself in the interview, he doesn't feel he's playing very well. So not playing very well and beating everybody else is a nice way to end up in the final. He's just saying his queuing action is terrible, that he can't get his rhythm, he can't get anything. So he's working very hard on trying to get that right. But I'm just wondering about Kieran Wilson, and it's going to be interesting to hear what Ken has to say about it and whether or not he's going to be able to handle the pressure that brings. I suppose he might feel I've got nothing to lose.
Absolutely. Mm. And we'll hear about that later.
Nobody expects me to beat Ronnie. Golf, there's plenty happening as well.
There is indeed. Shane Lowry, he's just shot off the lead after the second round in the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina. And it's looking good. It's looking good. He shot a 63 to end the day yesterday at 9 under par. So he's looking good to be challenging for that.
Mm. Yeah, it's certainly Tom Hodge, Taylor Gooch and Siwoo Kim are in the clubhouse as leaders on 10 under par. Seamus Power as well is 3 under following a very good second round of 69, and Graham McDowell is in a battle to make the cut. He's currently 2 over. As well as that, it's been confirmed that the 2020 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open has been moved to Antrim. Again, another victim of the COVID situation. The organisers have announced that the Open will now take place in Galgorm Castle on the 24th of September to the 27th. Obviously, Mount Juliet was to be the place in Kilkenny, but it's now changed due to the quarantine restrictions on players coming to the Republic from Ireland, into the Republic of Ireland, of course. And I'm just thinking out loud again with the other restrictions that have been imposed, with the likes of France and Spain and red lists, these tournaments and everything else, there's still a lot of doubt around everything that's going on at the moment. And there still is a lot of doubt. These things could falter. I mean, you know, look at there's a lot of outrage this morning with people who are kind of caught in limbo in the likes of France and trying to get back now that the UK have put that on their banned list and have to quarantine when they get back. Be a real blow when you're away to get that message that now when you get back you're now going to have to quarantine.
Absolutely.
When you went away it wasn't the case. So by no means is that a definite, but it's down as happening on the 24th to the 27th of September. Interesting to see if it does go ahead. And then just to finish on the golf, Jonathan Caldwell remains the best place of the Irish players on day 2 of the Celtic Classic on the European Tour. 3 under par ahead of his tee-off time, 8 shots back from the leader, Sam Horsford. Ireland's Cormac Sharvin is 2 under, and Gavin Moynihan is 3 over, and Paul McGinley is now plus 7. What else have we got?
We've got a little bit in boxing from yesterday. Poor Eric Donovan's defeat yesterday in the IBF Intercontinental Super Featherweight title fight. He lost to Zelfa Barrett in the 8th round, and he did, though, look very, very good. Mm. He looked like he was on top for the first 5 rounds, but it just seemed like there was a change. There was a shift in that fight yesterday that just changed it. And he had a 2 7 round knockouts.
Mm. Well, funnily enough, I heard him an interview pre-fight, and that was the big fear. He even said it himself, you know, the power that Zelfa Barrett had and the strength. He didn't doubt for one moment that Barrett wasn't a slightly stronger puncher or stronger puncher than himself. And Eric Donovan was aware of that, but he felt that his speed and his pace might be able to outwit his opponent and get the job done. And he was hoping that that was going to be the case. So obviously, for those first number of rounds, things were going to plan with that, and it looked like he was going to be okay, and maybe speed was going to come to the fore for him. But that's the danger with boxing. You get caught the wrong way, one bad hit, and that's it, you're gone. And that was the case for him, but no doubt he'll come back from it. I think it was a good performance, and I think one that, you know, learn good experience from it as well for Eric Donovan. So by no means is that the end from this. Probably just the beginning, to be fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah, indeed. So what else is happening around
We've
the place?
We've got a little bit of a chat about in the Scottish Premiership, and unfortunately there have been some games that have been called off. So in the SPL, the SPFL have commenced disciplinary proceedings against Celtic's Bowley Ballingoley and 8 Aberdeen players over breaches of coronavirus rules.
Yeah.
So Ballingoley took a secret trip to Spain and didn't quarantine on his return, while the Aberdeen players visited a city bar and 2 contracted COVID-19. So it's very strange now. It almost seems like they're trying to babysit them at the moment. And there's a few games now that are being called off in the Scottish Premiership due to some players not
adhering to the rules. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a huge amount of anger around this, especially the Ballingoley situation. I mean, for a player to take it on themselves, disappear off to Spain, not tell anybody, don't come back, don't quarantine. It's not just around sport here. I mean, it's just the responsibility of doing that. I mean, you can infect people. Like, it's so serious, and the anger around it for fans of football and of the club and the managers and everything else. I mean, never mind all the financial implications and the knock-on effects and the struggles that people have gone to and the sacrifices that they've made to get sport back on the table. I mean, to think that someone would recklessly endanger other people's lives, which is what it is, by doing this type of thing. There's no wonder there's calls for him to be booted out and the others to be booted out as well, because it's daft.
It is quite difficult as well, because there's a lot of his players who are actually turning on him as well, being like, well, we are adhering to these these rules.
Yeah.
And you're just going off enjoying yourself in Spain and not coming back and quarantining. And a lot of his teammates are actually going against him now and being like,
you can't.
Nobody can defend.
They can't. No. It's just not possible, because this is not some sort of, stupid curfew that you can't go out and have a few beers because you're on a team trip or something else. This is people's lives you're messing around with here.
Absolutely.
And as I said, a whole industry that's trying. And sport is on its knees in many places, and they're trying everything to try and get it back on track. And these types of reckless behaviour is just, it's absolutely daft. So hopefully we'll see serious repercussions, and I can't see much of a future with that kind of carry on.
Nope, not at all. You're ruining your reputation. We've also got a story as well. A lot of football today. We do. The FA Cup's replay will be scrapped for next season to help reduce congestion in the fixture schedule. So into the 2020-21 campaign will be starting later than normal after the previous one was delayed due to the coronavirus pandemic. So what do you think, Reggie? There's a lot of people who are talking about the replays being scrapped, and they're saying that an awful lot of the lower league teams are really angry about this, because a lot of lower league teams want to obviously play bigger teams in their home ground, and obviously if you don't get the luck in the draw to play a home first, a lot of these smaller teams in lower leagues are looking to get these bigger teams into their home stadium and to really
it's the fairy tale. I mean, if you're playing Man United back at home and you're the local team, and it's the fairy tale to have them come to town, or whomever it might be, Liverpool. And it's the big payday for the club. It's going to be a sellout. The whole town will revolve around that. But at the same time, I would agree with the no replay thing. I think it makes sense in the current situation. The chances of a minnow beating one of the big teams. I know the FA Cup throws up all sorts of wild cards and crazy situations every year, and the bigger teams usually play a slightly weakened squad when they're playing the minnows in the FA Cup at the early stages, and we have seen upsets and we have seen shocks and everything else, but in general the big team wins, the smaller team doesn't, so the likelihood of you getting a replay in your hometown it's slim enough, in my opinion. I know it does happen, but it's slim enough. I don't think it's a big deal. I know they'd be disappointed, but if you're lucky enough to be one of the ones who get the draw and get the team in the home place, you're going to get all those benefits anyway. So in the current situation, this schedule is absolutely jam-packed. They're trying to run off all competitions. It makes sense to me.
I don't know about you, Reggie, but I do think that this could be the first FA Cup where we'll actually start seeing an awful lot of the bigger teams in the bigger leagues
taking it more seriously
and also being a lot more higher teams in the last few rounds of the FA Cup. I can't see many of the lower league teams getting far.
No, I mean, apart from everything else, what you have to remember at the moment is sport, like I said earlier, is on its knees. We're going to be talking to Bernard Flynn a little bit later on about GAA, and he's got a really interesting article in the Mirror today talking about the lack of funding, the lack of funds that are available at GAA and county level. And I think this is the kind of the stuff that's going on in the background that we're not quite hearing about. Everybody's talking about get back to sport, get back out playing, get back training, get back this, that and the other. They're forgetting that the funds have run out that kind of allow people to get back training and playing and everything else. And with the minnows in the FA Cup, that's exactly the same situation. If you're looking at a powerhouse like Arsenal having to lay off 55 people because of so-called wage cuts that they need to make to keep things afloat, well, like what are Tranmere Rovers doing, you know? This is the type of thing you've got to think about. So, yeah, I think the big clubs are just going to steamroll because they're able to train as per normal, carry on regardless. And this pandemic is going to set a lot of sport back a great number of years, no doubt about it. So I think you're right. I think it'll be one of the big Premier clubs that'll just come out on top.
I think so too.
There's no doubt about it. And that it? Are we finished there with sport?
I think that's it.
Well, there certainly was plenty going on there. But as I said, we've loads still to come on the show. I will be talking to Bernard Flynn. Really looking forward to catching up with Bernard. Haven't spoken to him for a while. He's going to be talking to us about all of the club action from last week and this weekend. Plenty going on there in that. But also his article, as I mentioned there, in the Irish Daily Mirror today. Headline being, "The well has run dry and the sad reality is dawning on all involved." And that's all about the conversations that are going to have to take place between county managers and their management teams as the money is slowly running out at that level. So while the bigger counties might well be in good shape and might well be able to survive, the smaller counties, as I mentioned there in the FA Cup in a similar situation, are struggling and will continue to struggle. So we'll be talking to Bernard after 10 o'clock. And we do, of course, have our magic moment to discuss as well, which was Eamon Coughlan's 5,000-metre win back in 1983. I was joking here beforehand with Blaine, asking him what age he was, and he told me it was 13 years later that he was actually born. So that'll give you an idea of how far back, because I remember it well, unfortunately. But it's time to turn our attention to snooker now, and what an incredible 48 hours it has been. No question about it. Probably the best two semi-finals, I think, that have ever taken place in the history of the World Championships. And I hope I'm not wrong in saying that. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, how are you, Reg? Yeah, it was amazing days of snooker, and what we've seen, one of the most amazing frames. I mean, the 17-16, Anthony McGill and Corin Wilson that went on for over an hour. It was just incredible. I mean, everybody in the studio, all the staff were watching it. They were oohing and ahhing. It was completely highly entertaining, dramatic, you know. And everybody on the edge of their seat. And it was so, or at the finish on a fluke as well, when Corin Wilson flew that green. Oh, it was just gut-wrenching for poor old Anthony McGill, who fought so hard and played so well. And you saw what it meant to Corin Wilson at the end. He was in floods of tears.
Absolutely.
And and then, of course, to follow that up, then we had the crazy, sort of bizarre Ronnie O'Sullivan for a few frames, and then the genius Ronnie O'Sullivan in the last three frames.
Unreal.
I just couldn't believe it. I was absolutely shell-shocked watching it.
Well, get back to the first one. We'll talk Ronnie in a minute because that needs its own show. But, the score to finish in that frame that you mentioned there with Wilson and McGill, like 103-83. Was the finishing score.
I mean, if you have 15 reds, 15 blacks and all the colours, that's only 147 points, okay? So they finished with what?
186.
So, yeah, well, 39 points more than a maximum. So, it was the misses, you know, the fouls.
Yeah.
Then when red finished over the right centre pocket and they were going in and out of ball to try and hit it, missing it, and then McGill got it in the end and then should have cleared up. Then he potted the yellow. He snookered himself on the green. I mean, everything that could possibly happen. And then when McGill needed snooker, Corin Wilson played that shot on the red, a double kiss, and the white went in off.
Yeah.
And then he could win again. You know, it was just a it was one of the most amazing frames of snooker, I think. I mean, the most amazing frame was the 18-17 on the black when Dennis Taylor won it.
Yeah.
Back in 1985. That was 35 years ago. This frame that went to and from was just as good. And it reminded me of the 85 final that we all sort of watched when we were kids, you know.
I know, it was unbelievable, it really was. And it was riveting stuff. And I tell you, it's done wonders as well for snooker because, you know, everybody was talking about it, everybody was looking at it. And I think as well, you know, let's be fair, Anthony McGill and Kyron Wilson, I know they've got titles. I mean, McGill has won the Indian Open in 2016, and but it's kind of more... Like, he's definitely a newcomer, and I mean, with Kyron Wilson, he has a couple of titles as well. He's got Shanghai Masters and the Paul Hunter Classic and the German Masters as titles under his belt, but they're still relatively...
They're not big winners.
Yeah, they're not big winners. Yeah.
No, they're not big winners. I mean, Kyron Wilson is in the top 16. Anthony McGill, before this tournament, was ranked number 39 in the world, you know. So it just goes to show you, you know, his standard and the standard of even players at 39 in the world, what they could do. I mean, this is life-changing. It would have been life-changing more for Anthony McGill because, you know, he'd never been in a semi-final before. I mean, Wilson has, and Wilson's been more of a prolific winner than Anthony McGill. But what it has done, and I mean, there's two things what it has done. I mean, so many people have watched it. It's been fantastic for snooker. It's been a great sort of advertisement for snooker, for the game, you know, particularly when we're starved of live sport, and we have been because of the COVID crisis. The second thing I would say is the two guys at the end, you know, they sort of embraced each other. They shook hands. You know, they didn't touch against elbows. And even though he was absolutely, he must have been crushed, Anthony McGill, the way it finished. You know, he was a gentleman. He was like a sportsman. The way he said, "Look, congratulations and the best of luck in the final." You
absolutely.
Know, you know, he didn't just rush off and bounce off and like run to his dressing room.
Yeah,
that we might have seen another time. You know what I mean? It was just a great advertisement for snooker.
Well, funnily enough that you say that, because when you go across to the other semi-final, then it didn't end with that kind of feeling.
No,
you know, it was completely the opposite. I mean, we have to discuss that one in detail because, I mean, again, it was a massively entertaining game. You couldn't take your eyes off it. From the very beginning, Ken, you know, I mean, you had a situation where you were always wondering where the game was going. Did Ronnie... Yeah. You don't know what Ronnie... Is he taking it serious as he's coming in? He seemed to be... And, you know, it was tight at the beginning. There were chances where he could have gone further ahead. Either of them could and made... They looked a little bit nervy. But, you know, it ended up still coming down to the wire.
Yeah, I mean, at one stage in that final last night, Ronnie had thrown in the towel. He'd sort of given up.
Hmm.
Completely given up. And he actually... It sort of shocked... it certainly shocked us shooting because of some of the shots he was playing. To me, he'd almost... that he'd thrown in the towel, that he wasn't going to compete with Mark Selby. And all Mark Selby had to do was just pick him off. And he won a frame then... Like with a century break from the off, Mark Selby broke off. He potted this long red and made an incredible century break. And whatever, it sort of flicked the switch in him.
Yeah.
And then the next frame, he won it 0. So he went from, you know, 16-14 down. It looked like he'd totally given up. Played some bizarre shots, trying to get out of snookers, bashing the balls around.
That's right.
Like he didn't care where they went, you know.
Yeah.
And that to me was a sign that he sort of, he had lost all the fight in him to compete with Mark Selby, because Mark Selby had kept him all the way through.
And
then all of a sudden, it's like a flick. He made this most amazing 1-3-8 from nothing in like 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He made a 78 straight off the bat the next frame in another like 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And Mark's, hold a minute, this fella wasn't trying a few seconds ago, you know, a few minutes ago. And now all of a sudden, we're 16-all and they'll be flying, you know. It's just incredible
so hard to work out. I mean, if you look at the early stages of it, you know, he went into the lead, Ronnie, he looked comfortable, won the first two frames. I know Selby came back a little bit, but then it was 5-2 all of a sudden, and If I remember right, they took a break. And I think people were saying that maybe Ronnie had let Selby off the hook a little bit and that he could have gone further ahead again. And then all of a sudden, Selby comes out with a totally different attitude. And now it's gone to 8-6 in favour of Selby. Now, we were talking to Ken just before the break. We got cut off. We have him back on the line again. So, Ken, yeah, I was just saying to you, you know, Mark Selby seemed to have gotten himself into control in this game and haven't been behind, having started very shakily, got himself into 13-9. And from there on, as you said, it seemed to get dramatic. It seemed to be a little bit, well, what's happening with Ronnie? Then he goes and wins the next three frames, and all of a sudden they're neck and neck the whole way, nip and tuck the whole way to it. But it was a very annoyed Mark Selby that was interviewed afterwards. And I was trying to work this out because I was trying to work out was he just annoyed with himself because he didn't close Ronnie out when he maybe should have, or the disrespectful stuff that he was talking about, disrespecting the game, disrespecting him. I mean, did that carry any weight?
Well, I mean, some of the shots he was playing, as I said, was almost like I said, he'd given up. He's every right to do that, Ronnie. You know, but I think what he said as well, which is quite interesting, that he stood up when he was going for a red into the top pocket. He stood up and put his cue to the side as if he was going to concede, and expecting Max Selby to pot the red when he was 30-odd ahead and just like 35 left on the table. And Max Selby missed that red. He sort of caught him in his eye line. And Ronnie went on to win that frame and closed the gap to 13-10 instead of being 14-9. And they finished the session 13-11, and I think, you know, he sort of got annoyed about that. Like, when someone sort of stands up in your eye line and it's like puts the cue to the side, it looks like they're going to concede, you know?
It's like what you do to me when I'm putting in golf.
Very similar. But so he got annoyed about that. And I think he was annoyed at, you know, like, you know, the way he, as I said, he was just lashing the balls around like he'd almost given up, you know, at one stage. So I think when something like, that's what I'm saying, when something like that happens, you're completely shell-shocked, then somebody switches, flicks a switch and comes back at you, you know?
But that's...
By O'Sullivan did, which just, it was completely amazing.
Isn't that Ronnie, though? I mean, isn't
he
kind of...
Yeah, that's Ronnie. That's the way he is, yeah.
So maybe Selby should be looking at himself a little bit more and saying, well, you know, I allowed myself to get distracted, an experienced player like that, he probably shouldn't have.
I mean, whatever way Ronnie plays on the table, you know, that's up to him. You know, you know. But if he found that he thought he was standing up in his eye line on purpose, you know, to put him off, that's a different story.
That's a different story, of course.
What I would say is, for all his genius, and he is a genius, O'Sullivan, without a shadow of a doubt, he's been the most amazing snooker player I think that's ever lived and ever probably will live. You know, you know, it's great to have him in the final. It's going to be an amazing final. You know, the only thing I would say is, and I would take a stand, is don't slag off the rest of the tour like you did during the week.
Well, yes, I was going to ask
that
you about that.
That was morally wrong, Reggie, and I couldn't, you know, I can't stand for that. You know, no matter how good you are, you don't slag off your fellow professionals, because a lot of those kids, a lot of those people on the tour, whether they're struggling or not struggling, you know, the standard has been as high as it's ever been in our game, from top to bottom, top to bottom. And you've seen that by Anthony McGill getting to the semi-final, almost making it into the final. He's ranked number 39 in the world, you know. When I turned professional, the guys at the bottom, they weren't that good, you know. And like you do, you know, the first or second round, you might think, well, who am I playing in round three? Now you have to look at round one, you know, because the standard has got so good. We've got an influx of Chinese nuclear players as well who are top quality, you know. You don't slag off the tour like that you could cut your arm and leg off and beat most of the top 50 or whatever. That's what he said. That was just complete disrespect. Disrespectful, morally wrong, and I don't like that side of O'Sullivan. The other side, when he plays on the table, I love it. I love watching him play like we all do, you know, because he's a genius. But, you know, the negative side of O'Sullivan is the other side, and that's the bizarre side and the morally wrong side of slagging off fellow professionals. You would never have it in another game. A Federer wouldn't do it. A Tiger Woods wouldn't do it.
No.
You know, even in your own game, you wouldn't do it. O'Driscoll wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? No matter how good you are, you know, you still have to respect your opponents, because a lot of these guys on the tour, they would have, like, O'Sullivan would have been their inspiration, you know? He's an ambassador to the game.
Yeah.
They would love watching him play. They would be inspired by him. They took up the game probably because of him.
Yeah.
And he just cast them aside like they were...
But it's the problem.
Port on his shoe, you know. Like
I agree with you 100%. I mean, it was horrible to listen to the way he was going on. It seemed like he thought he was being funny and smart and all the rest of it, but like. Yeah. There was something that he meant in it as well, and you kind of say to yourself, and even with his interview afterwards about Selby, he turned around and he said, look, I'm just going to get up there and lash the ball. I'm not going to go down and have it reset 7 or 8 times. I haven't got time for that. I have better things to be doing. That's exactly what he said on Eurosport. He said, I have better things to be doing. Well, what better things have you to be doing? You're a professional snooker player playing in the biggest tournament that there is, and you're you know, you're in the semi-final of it. What more should you be doing? And if that's the case, go and do it. And the other thing then is it a case of that he's just too big for the game because they won't reprimand him or they don't discipline him or they don't take action when he does all these things?
No, because it's very difficult to take action against someone who, unless he brings the game into disrepute, you know, that's the only time they can take action. I mean, they've taken action against O'Sullivan more than any other player. You know, he's had,
but he's done more than any other player, though, Ken.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's said more things. He's brought
said
the game.
More things. Yeah, he's brought the game into disrepute many times. You know, or whatever he's done, and he's been fined more than any other player. You know, I don't know whether they can take action against sort of. By slagging off other players, I don't know where they can go. I don't know what the rules are, to be honest. You know, that's up to Barry Hearn and stuff like that.
I don't feel that's ever going to happen, though.
He gets the headlines for the game. You know, people are watching because he's playing, and I don't mind it. I don't mind his bizarre interviews about other stuff that he does about queue actions. Queue actions on Amazon. That's quite funny to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But don't slag off your professionals. You know,
it was very bad.
Don't slag off your game. That's given you an amazing life, and don't slag off your fellow professionals. That's not the done thing, you know. Everybody, I was brought up to have respect for others as a kid, and that's what I was taught, you know. And he should have respect for his other professionals, whether they're not as good as him, and they're not most of them, and all of them aren't. But you still have to have respect for them because all they're trying to do is earn a living and play a game that they love. You know what I mean? And love watching him play, by the way, as well, and look up to him, but. You know, what he did was morally wrong, and you know, somebody has to take a stand of it.
I think, my understanding is that himself and Mark Selby would be fairly pally, but Selby was very, very annoyed afterwards.
No, not at all. They wouldn't be very pally.
Are they not? No.
Nobody. The only one that would be quite pally would have been maybe Jimmy White, you know?
Okay. Yeah. No, I wasn't sure, but they hinted towards that, you know, they get on well off the table, but that Selby was very annoyed about it. Now, I mean, with Selby, it felt to me as well almost personal. I'm sure it does for a lot of the pros you know, to beat Ronnie and put him back in his box is kind of the goal. And I think I felt Selby was as annoyed with himself as he was with Ronnie about not putting him back in his box when he had a chance.
I think it was like that he sort of let him off the hook, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, even Mark Selby, you know, couldn't have done anything about those last 3 frames, the way he played. I mean, the last frame, he had a great chance and just sort of messed it up. After O'Sullivan had made 64 and missed sort of match ball. But the previous 2 frames, he couldn't have done anything about it because that was Ronnie in full flight. That was the genius of Ronnie O'Sullivan. I mean, he can play the game at the highest sort of temperature, but play it like he's playing in the snooker club. That's his talent, you know. Amazing gift to have, you know.
It is. Before I let you go there, but just, you know, the final, it's teed up now. As we said, you know, the underdog, the obvious underdog is Karen Wilson. He doesn't have that many titles under his belt. Ronnie has done everything. What way do you see it going? Some are saying Ronnie will run away. You seem to think it might be a bit closer.
I don't think he's going to run away with it because I think Wilson is a really, you know, top player. I'm hoping that he will put it up to Ronnie and have a really good final, you know. And I'm really looking forward to how it's going to map out. I mean, it's going to be exciting because Ronnie's in it. There's going to be a crowd of like 300 allowed into the arena. That was announced by the government just the other day, which is fantastic, you know. I'm hoping it's going to be a really good final.
Do you think
I think Ronnie is going to win.
Yeah.
But I just hope that it will be a really good final.
Is there a chance, do you think, that if Karen Wilson can kind of get a few frames ahead that, given Ronnie's past track record, that he might get Ronnie to just give up.
He might get him at him. I mean, that's the interesting question. That's why so many people will watch it. They'll watch it for the genius that was Sullivan.
Yeah.
But they'll watch it to see Willie crack. You know, Willie throw the towel in if Wilson sort of gets to him, because Wilson is in the sort of the mode of the likes of Selby. And O'Sullivan doesn't like playing players like that. He won't battle out. He doesn't want prolonged frames. He wants the frames won in, like, you know, 10 to 15 minutes max. Like, you know,
none of this. So
whether Wilson will be able to get to him or not, that is the big question.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. Well, hopefully we won't see any more 6 minute shot time frames from Wilson to try and get Ronnie rattled, which we saw.
No.
Okay, look, I'm going to have to let you go, Ken. Great chatting. It'll be good to have you back at some stage. I know at this stage, I'm sure you're looking forward to getting back home. It's been a long time over there, but it's nearly there, and plenty more great snooker to come. We'll chat to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks, bye, Ken. Bye. Well, it's time for our magic moment in sport this week, and on this week's edition of our magic moment, we celebrate the 37th anniversary of Eamon Coughlin's win in the 5,000 metres at the inaugural World Championships in Athletics. Eamon ran the perfect race from being third at the bell to then making his move 300 metres out. By the time the runners hit the home stretch, it was all over. Eamon Coughlin finished the race with a time of 13 minutes and 28.53 seconds. And he ran the last 1,000 metres at a sub-4-minute mile pace. Incredible stuff. This win in Helsinki has always cemented his place in Irish sporting history as one of the greatest moments. Let's have a listen to that final lap now.
Coughlin looking back for Vesinaga, and Coughlin's closing. Closing very, very quickly. Vesinaga's a long way behind now. Now, if Coughlin doesn't panic and go too soon, he's got a real chance. It's Coughlin against Dimitriev. But will Coughlin wait? Because if he does, he's the world indoor mile record holder. He's a very fast finisher. He doesn't need to go too soon. And he did check back and look inside. The attacking point will come off the bend. And he looks at Dimitriev and says, watch me go. And go he does. Eamon Coughlin on his way to a major title for the first time in his life. The champion of the world.
The champion of the world, yes indeed. And your text messages coming in. My mum took me to the Mansion House for Eamon's homecoming. Great day out in the big smoke, Rory Mayo Man in Dublin. Eamon's Helsinki final is one of our famous favourite races ever. And the drama of the last lap, the bravado and the redemption. That comes in from Adrian. And one of my earliest memories, everyone gathering in and sitting glued to the telly. That comes in from Damien. And funnily enough, that's a memory I have myself as a 12-year-old when that race was going on. Everybody gathered around, I suppose, at a time when we didn't have that much on an international stage to be able to cheer about in terms of that type of sport. You know, maybe in boxing we might have been able to do it, and in later times it certainly happened. But it seems, in my memory, it's the earliest one of that kind of international standard. And I remember sitting around as a family as we watched Eamon get that homecoming and get the whole country behind him. I was joking with you before, Blaine. No chance whatsoever that you remember any of it, being as young as you are. But you've certainly heard things about it over the years.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorry about that. You know, my dad did say to me, he was like, "Oh, do you know, Blaine, there's this one moment back in 1983 when obviously it was very strange, you know, for us Irish to be such great runners." And my dad was like, "You have to watch Eamon Coughlin, his win in 1983, the 5,000 meter in Helsinki." And I remember watching it, and just that final lap when Dimitriev, was 15 meters ahead of him in the last 300 metres, and I just remember just Eamon Coughlin, just literally the burst of energy he got, and just he flew to the finish line was phenomenal.
Well, Eamon, you know, his career was well documented, and there's been loads of stories around it. RTÉ have done many documentaries about it, and I've spoken to him many times about it. I mean, he's forged an incredible career out of it. And, you know, he was known as the chairman of the boards. That was his nickname, because indoor was his real speciality. And he went to America at times when it was kind of a rarity for athletes to go over there on scholarships, but he went over there, and I remember listening to a great docuseries about him, and he was talking about getting over there and the difference that that meant to him and how he studied over there, but basically he lived a professional life that he couldn't live here, training, eating, sleeping, sport alongside his studies. And that's what brought him on and brought him on to the level that he was at. And like, he set the world record for the indoor mile with a time of 3:52 in San Diego in the sports arena back in 79. So, I mean, the build up to this was coming for a long time, and a huge amount of work went into it. He never actually won an Olympic medal. He came fourth in successive games in 76 and in 1980 in different disciplines. But, you know, I think that probably is one of the heartbreaks for him. But at the same time, he doesn't let it define him. He doesn't kind of let it stick in his mind too much because of the other amazing achievements that he has. I mean, he's got three AAA titles. He won the 1500 metres in the 79 Athletics Indoor Championships and took silver in the outdoor in the 78 Athletics Championships. And he's 11 Irish Championships, a World Cup in the 5000 metres in 81, and a world record indoor for 2000 metres at 4:54, and broke the sub 4 minute mile in the 94 past the age of 40. So quite an absolutely incredible athlete, no question about it, and one who was probably our most famous sportsman at that time.
Absolutely, and his accolades show it, doesn't it?
Yeah, we have plenty of other superstar sports people nowadays, but at the time, to give you an idea, I think even Bono, when they were in their prime, 83, was that in the Phoenix Park or Croke Park? I can't quite remember where they were, but I know he stopped the concert for to mention that famous win of him and Coughlin's. Where was it? It was in the Phoenix Park.
Apparently, it was at the races. It was, that's what it was, and it was his first headline gigs. And they stopped the gig to say, you know, Eamon Coughlin had won the 5000 meters, and you know what? As well, they did also they also did mention it over the PA in Croke Park when Galway and Donegal were playing in the All Ireland semi-finals that year too.
Very good. So that's the level it was at. It was big enough to stop you two. You don't be able to say that too often. Okay, so that's our major sporting moment this week, celebrating the 37th anniversary of the great Eamon Coughlin and that win in the 5,000 metres in the inaugural World Championships in Helsinki. And a great memory to have. Okay, we'll move on now. I suppose we're going to talk a little bit about rugby, which is due to come back next week, all going well. Although there is a little bit of controversy around it at the moment. Maybe controversy is not the right word, a little bit of worry about it probably is slightly better, as Munster had to cancel training after an academy player tested positive for COVID-19. Six more players are also self-isolating, and the province has revealed. So Munster are due to play Leinster on the 22nd of August as in the Guinness Pro 14. That's all still scheduled to go ahead following the suspension of rugby due to the coronavirus pandemic. So it'll be interesting, Blaine, I suppose. I think they're probably have been able to, once they can get the contact tracing, it is lucky in the sense that it's an academy player and they don't tend to mingle too much at the same times unless there's contact training sessions going on. So hopefully those players hadn't mixed with the senior squad at that point. But I'm sure all the testing has been done on it to make sure it's on track. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. But of course they started last night across the water in the English Premiership. But there's fairly strict restrictions in place.
Very strange ones, isn't there, Reggie? That, like, they've put very strict restrictions saying that they're forbidden hugging, celebrating tries within 2 metres. Despite, you know, the scrums rucking and mauling, players will be prohibited from shaking hands, high-fiving during celebrations and all that stuff. Obviously, they can't share equipment either. And during their water breaks, they've got their own assigned named bottles. Now, Reggie, this is very strange because you're looking at obviously the different sport. You look at the Champions League, the Premier League, and players were able to celebrate during, you know, when they scored a goal, when they had won a game. What do you think of this, Reggie? Like, it's very, very strange. Is it fair? Obviously, with this being such,
I just don't know how they're going to manage it. I really don't. I mean, it makes it. Like, rugby is without a doubt the most contact sport in terms of, you know, how close players get to each other. I mean, if you're down in a scrum, two sets of front rows locking down, you're breathing in each other's ear, for God's sake. I mean, it's the same way with the second rows in there. You cannot actually get closer in any sport than two lads ear to ear driving in a scrum. Same thing happens in rucks and mauls and everything else. Even in tackling, you're lying on top of each other on the ground. And, you know, that's just part of the game. How it makes a difference whether or not they're going to be high-fiving each other after they score a try or giving a lad a clap on the back or a hug or whatever is beyond me, because all the damage, if there was any damage to be done, has already been done. So it's kind of a pointless protocol in my mind to stick in there, because if you're going to say that the sport is clear to play, that the players have passed all the tests, that, you know, there's no COVID on the pitch or no infection on the pitch, well, then that's what you're saying. And I get the, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, can they be tested and it lie dormant and not be come on stream for 12 hours later or something? I don't know the medical side of it, but if it's getting the go-ahead, then I just don't understand what all this other extra protocol is about. It doesn't make sense.
Do you feel like it's going to, like, kind of ruin the atmosphere of a game?
I know. I mean, like, I think the atmosphere thing is going to be down to the crowd. I mean, that's just going to be... It's like, I've tried to watch football without the crowds. And I have to say, the fake noise or the fake fans shouting and roaring helps. There's no question, because it seems a bit more real. But sport without the spectators is just, it's a sterile environment. So, I mean, the atmosphere thing, it must be very difficult for the players. So I don't think that side of things is going to be affected at all. But I just find it bizarre. I don't know how they're going to control it or marshal it. I mean, the referee comes running over and goes, oh, lads, get away from each other. Stay away 2 metres or whatever. It's just weird. I just don't understand why they've had to go to that level. You know?
I'd love to see a good socially distanced scrum now. That'd be great.
Look, that's the thing. It's that isn't happening, you know. So everything else in the game is allowed to go ahead, but you can't go in and high five a fella afterwards. So maybe it's just there as a way that they had to put it in to get the clearance to go ahead and play the match. You'll find there's something in it like that, you know. But more importantly, it's sport is back. We just have to hope that it is contained while the sport is back and that there isn't any outbreaks in it, because I can assure you, if the outbreak happens during a match, it won't be because some guy clapped another guy in the back when he scored a try. It'll be because of something else that happened in much more close contact at an earlier stage. So, we'll just have to watch this space and see. It's going to be very interesting to see if they do go ahead next weekend after that tested positive case in Munster. It might be just in time, you know, the timing of it when it came out last week, between then and when the game actually takes place, and with everybody kind of being tested and isolated and everything else. But it really does mess with training preparations too, you know, because as I said, a lot of the senior teams like to use the academy players in their training squads to bolster the squads and make training sessions a lot more realistic. That would have been the case, and now obviously with the academy guys being isolated, they're not allowed to do that. So just preparations will be affected by it too. But look, we'll know a little bit more when we see the rugby resume next week, if it does indeed happen that way. Delighted now to be joined on the line by Bernard Flynn. Morning, Bernard. How are you?
Reggie, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Great to chat to you. I haven't spoken to you for a while. You're keeping well?
I'm good, guys, considering everything, and it's great to hear you guys keeping the good work up. So I was listening to you earlier on, and I got goosebumps when you were sort of reading and speaking about Eamon Cochran's wonderful achievement going back. So I was in the car at home here now, so yeah. Great to talk to you guys.
Absolutely, good to talk to you as well, Bernard. Yeah, Eamon's memories for all of us. But there was a few memories, we'll get to them a little bit later on as well, where you were involved yourself with the Sean Boylan documentary, and I'm going to talk to you about that a little bit later on. But in the meantime, before I get to that, I was reading your article in the Irish Daily Mirror today. It's really interesting, and the headline is, "The well has run dry and the sad reality is dawning on all involved." And essentially what you're saying is that money is running out at county level and that there's going to be some pretty awkward conversations to be had between county managers and coaches and teams over the next while. And you feel as many as a half a dozen counties might well be broke?
I'd say more, Reggie, to be honest. And it's not something you like sort of bringing to the fore, to the attention of people. But it's a real, real serious issue at the moment. And listen to Michael Dygan and some of the other chairmen and the Laois County Board chairman, people like that. The reality is a lot of these counties are actually insolvent. Maybe except the top four or five, six, you know, the Dublins, with all due respect, maybe the Kerrys, people like that, that maybe have a little war chest, whatever. Majority county boards, they actually carry out their funding and finances on the intake from, you know, the attendance at championship games. That's gone. And I'd say what's coming next year, and the word is that this will be definitely a situation where next year we could be limited crowds such as well. But overall, county boards are on their knees. These guys do it voluntary, and they're looking around now, where are they going to pay the bills? The big problem I see, Reggie, is can county board chairmen recklessly allow teams go back train when they actually have no money to pay them? That's the big question, and it's very serious.
And, you know, there has been talk, of course, that there has been money coming from the government to assist major sporting bodies. Is that, you know, does that have to be divvied out a little bit better to the lesser counties, maybe?
Yeah, no, it's a good point that you're making. The funding is around 40 million for all the sporting bodies. Just the word on the grapevine is the Croke Parks or the GA, somewhere around 20 million. I'm not so sure, but that's allegedly what their divvy up is out of that. The thing is, are Croke Park going to want to keep that for themselves, you know, in, when I mean themselves, up in Dublin, and not disperse it to the county boards? I don't think they're in a position to do that now. But will they divvy it up, and how do they go about that? So if you take the top five or six counties, I would say there's 20 plus counties on their knees right now, and it's either Croke Park and that money, the government funding for sporting bodies, or the government themselves directly. If Croke Park can't sort out all the county boards, they're going to look at let's say the government themselves, and what can they do? So it's, if you look at, just have a look what the breaking announcement, I was in shock this morning when I just seen, Leeds have just announced, it's breaking news, just literally hot off the shelf, that they're actually stopping all supporters. There's only 200 allowed. All games now for the Junior Intermediate Championship in Leitrim have been played behind closed doors fully. So that's another move and a huge statement.
And that's a county with virtually no COVID. I mean, it's the lowest case numbers.
Yes.
I know it's the smallest county, but it's the lowest case numbers in the country. I was down there myself last week, down in Ballinamore for a week, and it was beautiful down there. Lovely part of the world. I know it well. I love it. But it's a very safe environment, and they've still taken that huge measure to play everything behind closed doors.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you a good one. This might be interesting to your listeners there, Reggie, is that, like, my own son at my own club here is Mullingar Shamrocks, and we brought a match there, the championship match, to see what took place with two clubs, excluding the players and management, and to see maybe, I think, somewhere around 100 tickets left. Now, the problem is there's maybe fallouts and rows and fights going on. How do you actually disperse those? Unless you have a draw, an open draw, which maybe guys get them that shouldn't get them, it's a nightmare. And I'd say Leitrim are having untold problems like many other counties. And you know what? Their stance on that, I'd say, is as much to do with the problem with ticket allocation as it is to do with COVID. That's a massive problem, and I've seen it myself. I mean, I didn't have a ticket until maybe 50 minutes before the game. I didn't want to push somebody else out that had one. I did get one because somebody else couldn't go, and it was just a nightmare. So all those issues are there. They're not nice to deal with. But Leitrim's stance and announcement, I think you could see it go, it just could snowball.
When you look at these situations like that, Bernard, and the things that are going on, and the difficulties involved for clubs to try and get back playing, and the cost involved with all the sanitisation, and the measures that have to be taken, and everything else that goes on, should they have even bothered? Like, would it have been better to just say, let's hold off until we can go back at it properly? I mean, the idea of having 100 people, you know, it's 200 in total, but leaving aside the players and stuff, 100 people, is it worth it? Like, I mean, would have been better off just to say, you know what, let's call a halt on it until we can go back at it properly.
Well, if you just look the last couple of days, and I think that point, you know, as time goes on, a lot of people are asking that question. I honestly think the return of the games, they did it for the right reasons. We, young guys trying to get them back out there, you know, mental health, all of that. I think it was done for the right reason. I've absolutely no issue. If you look at it, you know, a hand down in Limerick, the Carlow clubs, four clubs in the last few days have called a halt to all activities, just in the last couple of days in different counties. My thing now, Reggie, is I'm actually probably predicting we might not see the end and the finishing of the club championships. Yeah. And if you look at all the tests and what's happening over the last couple of weeks on the spike, it's looking inevitable that we might not see the finish of the club counties in some counties, but it might happen in others. And behind closed doors could come in. But I think it's inevitable now. The big one, you probably come to it, is that the county, inter-county championship, I don't think in October will actually take place.
Yeah.
I hope
yeah.
I'm wrong. But I think that's
well. I mean,
look,
Tip is coming out this morning as like they won't know till Monday, so Tip is in doubt. I mean, there's no question about it. The county could go like Kildare and Offaly and Laois, and if it could happen in Tip, it could happen anywhere else. And I mean, for a, you know, it's very hard to imagine how inter-county championship can return if some counties are locked down. They can't even train and prepare for it. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. But if you look at it now, the word on saying the grapevine is now that maybe Offaly and Kildare and those counties, they might be in lockdown for beyond next weekend.
Right.
Or next Sunday, I think it's 16 days officially.
Yeah.
The word is now that could be extended. So the club championships, you know, they're not training. They're going to run behind by 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it may be. So to go back in, you can't ask guys within a couple of days just to go out and throw them out in the championship match. They have to maybe train and stuff like that. So that runs in, affects the county boards. I just think there's a few things coming down the line which I don't want to see, but I just think the point you made overall, people are asking out, you know, some people that don't maybe are not GA fans or stuff have said to me and stopped me at times to say, why did it go ahead? For God's sake, it was wrong. And I'd say that point that you make now maybe was the one to stick with, but I do understand what decision was made. But I think if I am listening to people who are telling me from different counties what's happening, I think in the next 2 weeks we're going to see a situation where maybe club football and inter-county football just can't be played.
Yeah, well, that's a very, very serious thing to have happen, and it's very, very worrying. There's no question about it. And I like you, Bernard, you know, I understand why it went back, and I get it. I mean, I look at my own kids, and they're cracking up. They can't take being at home the whole time. And when sport went back, they were just so happy. And I mean, even, believe it or not, they're asking me, is school opening? They want to go back to school. And I mean, that's a strange thing for kids to want to do, but that's the reality of it. They want to get back with their friends. They want to get back mixing and mingling. And sport is the greatest conduit of all for that. So I understand that completely as well. And when I was in Leitrim, I saw many clubs out around Fianna and places like that. They were all out, Drumshambo, out practicing with, and it was all fields of kids. Do you know what I mean? It was all the local kids back out playing. So I understand the need to try and get back from a mental health point of view for children and for young adults and for adults indeed as well. But I suppose maybe just playing those club games is a step too far at this stage. But look, everybody's an expert with hindsight.
Everyone is. It's true. All right. There's no doubt. And people, there's an argument from both sides of the fence, we like. And then I went to a match there a number of weeks ago. It was the first challenge match our club played. A team from Longford came up on a wet night. The guys were jammed into cars. They got tugged out. Sorry, they were tugged out, walked out onto the pitch. It was lashing rain.
Yeah.
To see them getting back into their cars, stuck four and five of them together, and probably an hour before they got a shower and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I just couldn't see. When I looked in the cold light of day at this right in front of me,
yeah,
and my own son was playing, etc., I just said, this is wrong. It's actually not right. So, you know, we're asking guys on fields to do things that is completely against all the restrictions and all the guidelines. So
yes,
that's the issue I had from the outset. I said it at RTÉ as well, very strongly at the time. Mm. And it's a double-edged sword. But now I think it's getting quite serious. And decisions, harsh decisions, are going to have to be made. If you look at the people in Offaly, leave out sport, but their actual businesses and yes, their lives, yeah, they're on lockdown. Yeah. I'm only a few minutes away here, and it makes no sense that those three counties are singled out. But as you said, the word I'm hearing is that other counties are going to be locked down by the end of next weekend, and I think club will just be a secondary. It's the people's lives and the welfare. It's the kids, I feel, for. I have a daughter going into Leaving Cert. She's even talked to me this week. Dad, I don't know what's happening. Am I going back to school properly? Is it one day, 2 days a week? So there's a lot of other, probably more important issues with families and parents and work and childcare. So it's just a bit of a mess. And we got to stay strong and stay safe is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Reggie, at this stage.
Absolutely. You're not wrong there. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not laughing to myself, but I'm just thinking to myself, like it's like the comparison over in the Gallagher Premiership there. We were talking about it, myself and Blaine. You know, they've allowed rugby back. It started back last night. You've got scrums rooking, mauling, tackling, falling all over each other, lying on the ground, blah, blah, blah. And then they're saying, but you can't high five, you can't tap a lad in the back, and you can't hug if they score a try. So, you know, it's almost like what we're talking about with the three counties in lockdown. You know, you can do everything else, but just don't do the high five and everything. Like, the damage is already done, is what I'm saying, in the scrums, the mauls, the rooking. And it's the same way with the football and the GA and the hurling. Like, lads are in close proximity to each other on the pitch, and then you stick four of them in a car together after the game, and you think that's going to make it all right. It's a bit nonsensical.
It's madness. I mean, I got slaughtered for it there a few weeks ago when I was on radio saying this. I said, someone please tell me, how can you have all the restrictions, the guidelines, the protocols, and yet you're asking guys to do the complete opposite? That challenge match I went to that night, it was a rainy night. Guys were literally, there was a few fracas and a few arguments, yeah. Jostlings. They were literally spitting on top of each other, yeah. Mauling each other. You know, you're on top of each other, pulling, dragging, and it just made no sense.
Yeah.
It really did. And I'd love to see the games back. I know it's a bit better conditions now and the weather, etc. But overall, if you look at the picture, anyone get a chance to have a look at the picture from the Leitrim Intermediate Championship match the other night? It was a small little sort of shed stand that fitted maybe only maybe 100, 150 people. They were jammed in together in its standing,
yeah.
If you look at it. And it just made no sense. Looking out on the field, I went to a championship match here where we all, there was, you can fit 12, 13,000 in the stadium here at Cusick Park. And it was 200, let's say 100 people in a whole ground, and yet the guys were on top of each other, pulling, dragging, and it just doesn't make sense to me personally, it doesn't.
Yeah, I can completely understand where you're coming from on that. We're just going to have to wait and see. Before I let you go, I have to talk about the fantastic documentary. I saw plenty of clips of you running around in your youth in that brilliant documentary about John Boylan. There's no doubt about it. I was laughing, looking at Jinxie there, chatting and talking about the good old days. And I know yourself would have been in the middle of it all as well. It was a brilliant documentary. What a brilliant 23 years Sean Boylan put in there.
Indeed, you know, and I know I refer to my article today, but, you know, Tommy Conlon's piece, and I know Tommy's a good guy in that,
yeah.
But people are actually, a number of people stopped me this week speaking about Reggie, and they're actually saying, you know, they couldn't believe that I was trying to tell people that exactly what the guys were saying was correct and the truth,
yeah.
And Sean was exactly as he came across, and they couldn't get it that he never actually said to go out and do guys or target guys, and genuinely that never happened. And I was trying to explain to people that he didn't have to. We possessed half a dozen of savages that did that themselves,
yeah.
On their own,
yeah.
And that's you know, you played in team sport,
absolutely.
And guys take ownership, and the leaders look after certain situations, and physicality of it. Our big leaders did that themselves. Sean knew that. He knew how to sort of mould it. But Reggie, the one thing I will say is that in Irish sport, for me, he's one of the greatest human beings that I've ever met or seen. And he's a special person. He's helped so many people from different counties. And he's an extraordinary man. And I only had one manager for my whole entire 11 years into county, and it was him, and it was a pleasure. But he's as nice as he came across.
Yeah.
And the guys, they actually told the truth, and some people were looking for something that really wasn't there. He's as genuine, as nice as that. And maybe our players have questions to answer over certain things that happened, but certainly not him.
I don't buy into that either, Bernard, because I tell you, I remember that era so well. I watched every bit of it, and I mean, it was as give as good as you get. It was tough football. It was hard times. And don't try and tell me that Cork didn't have their moments. The Dubs are well known for being tough. Down Tyrone, there's a few lads I know in Galway that wouldn't take a step back either. So, like, you know, it wasn't a case of you lads being out there on your own by any means. Football was a tough, uncompromising sport, same way with hurling in those days. Indeed, my own sport, rugby, was well known for being tough in a different way as well, and yeah, had to watch yourself in certain areas. So to me, you know, it was the game, and you know, and don't forget, people went along for that too. They loved it, that rivalry.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Reggie. Gaelic football was different back then. I'm not saying it was any better.
Yep.
Today's game is a better product, there's no doubt. But it was a different sport, a different concept, and you had to watch yourself, and you had to defend yourself and mind your own little corner. It was completely different. And I remember going back in club football as well as county, and it just was a different animal back then. And listen, it was what it was, and that was it.
Absolutely.
You had to deal with it.
Well, I tell you, really, Bernard, rugby was no different, and it might have the reputation of being,
correct,
you know, the gentleman's sport, let's call it. But I can tell you, on a cold day in Shannon, you had to watch your back. You give as good as you get, or you'll be in serious trouble.
Exactly. And the only thing, we looked after each other, Reggie. We were loyal to a man to each other. Maybe that was our downfall. We probably won as much as we lost, but you know what?
Yeah,
we were loyal.
As well as that, though, off the pitch, yeah, those rivalries were just put to bed. And I know that you'd have friends for life from all the other counties in the same way as I would from rugby. So, you know, on the pitch is one thing, off the pitch is another.
Reggie, listen, the Dubs, some of the great friends, Keith Barr, I spoke to him there the other day.
Yeah.
Eamon Heary, Tommy Carr is a close friend of mine here. But the Kerry lads, Cork lads, Dinny Allen, Billy Morgan and Vise and Colman Corrigan, I'm great mates, Stephen O'Brien with them all. But
yeah,
the one thing I'd say is, and you mentioned one guy there, when the documentary was on, Reggie, the other night, my roommate was Jinxie Beggy.
God help you.
And I'll tell you one thing. When I was watching the programme, all I could think was the fun and the crack.
Yeah.
It was tears coming down my face with laughter at the fun me and him had. So
absolutely,
it brought great memories back. And all we have, Reggie, is you might get a few injuries, but we have the memories.
Exactly.
The medals I don't really care about, but it's the fun and the crack and the memories.
Well, let's hope everybody else can get back to proper sport soon and proper football and hurling and get those memories built as well. Bernard, as always, been great chatting to you. Going to have to go now and let you go, although I could stay chatting to you all day, but I have to get to the football. We'll talk to you again very soon, please God.
Lads, keep up the great work there. You're doing a great job. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Bernard.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Bye-bye, boys.
Time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined, as always, by the great Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Reggie. How are you? Are you okay?
I'm doing well, thanks. Doing very well. We've had a great show, so I've really enjoyed it. But last night you had the pleasure of being up at the Dundalk Waterford, if that's the right word to use, pleasure, game. They managed to haul it back to 2-2, but I mean, they made hard work of it, Dundalk.
Yeah, it was lovely, Reggie, just to be even at a match, to be honest with you. That's the first one I've been at now since, obviously, we covered a game a couple of weeks ago, but that's the first one I've been at, and it was weird and surreal. The game's kicking off at 5:45, obviously no fans and all, but it is what it is and everybody has to get on with it, and that's the situation at the moment. But Dundalk were very disappointing again, Reggie, and that's only 2 points they've picked up out of 9 now since the restart, and the league is all but gone now. Like, people were suggesting beforehand that they might be still in them, but I think it's all over now. Obviously Shamrock Rovers have a game at hand as well. If they were to win that, that's 10 points on them.
Yeah.
But even if they don't win that, I think the gap is too big now. And not alone that, with the gap being as big, they're not playing well enough, Dundalk. Whatever's gone on and since the restart the last 3 weeks, it's not like they've been unlucky. It's not like they're putting in great performances and being unlucky. They've actually been poor in the games as well, which is very surprising. And last night was no different, because Waterford came and they sat in. They were quite happy to sit in. They were well organised. But Dundalk didn't do anywhere near enough to try break them down, and it wasn't like they were creating chances. They only really came alive with probably 10-15 minutes to go when Waterford had a player sent off, and they got the first goal and they pushed on then. And to be fair, Reggie, as mad and all as the game was, they actually could have won it at the end. Daniel Cleary missed a great chance, and they should have won it, hit the bar, but 2-2 was the least Waterford deserved, and Dundalk were lucky to even just get back into the game.
Yeah, well, they left it fairly late to get those strikes, so as you said, it would have been very late to get the winner. It wasn't without a little bit of drama off the pitch as well. Vinnie Perth and John Sheridan. Vinnie Perth not happy with John Sheridan and his comments about the league.
Yeah, it's strange this, because watching the game, there was no real needle in the game, Reggie, and obviously with the situation with no fans, you can hear everything going on, so it wasn't like the two benches were arguing back and forth or there was any needle on the pitch. This all kind of kicked off right at the end as the two managers went over to shake hands or do the elbow gesture, whatever they do nowadays. But And even at that, you could see there was a few verbals, or there was a bit of kind of a couple of them not happy with each other. And obviously, Vinny seemed to be having words with John Sheridan, and a couple of the Waterford staff were holding them back. But it was only really to like a home and saw the comments online and stuff that obviously Vinny came out and said to the media exactly what John Sheridan had said, and basically saying it's a pub league and a Mickey Mouse league and this kind of talk. And it's totally disrespectful to everybody involved in the league, and especially if he's over here as a manager. I don't think he should be coming out with that stuff. He's quite vocal on the line, John Sheridan, because obviously people, we hadn't seen him in the league before. That was my first time to see him on the sideline, and he's getting stuck in. He's having a go in terms of his players and motivating them, and he's quite vocal. As I say, I've no problem with that, but coming out with stuff like that after the match, and he's only in the country 2 weeks and the league, I thought it was completely bang out of order, to be honest with you, and he shouldn't be saying that.
Yeah, well, no, it is. It seems very out of order, and you know, almost to the point where, again, we don't know. It's just what one person is saying about it, that saying that it's a pub league and saying that, who are you? You're going to get the sack soon. All this kind of comments. It just seems very petty. It's childish, Alan. That's what it
That's
is.
That's exactly it, Reggie. Childish. And to be fair, look, don't get me wrong. We're involved in the league here sometimes, and people can be biased. I wouldn't be biased towards it. There's plenty we can improve on and plenty we should be doing, and we've let ourselves down many a time. Yeah. And this league should be further progressed on than where it is. But there's a perception from across the water from people that it is a Mickey Mouse league.
Yeah.
And that's totally wrong, Reggie. If you look at the amount of players that have gone away from this league and done quite well for themselves, gone up into the international team, there's plenty of people involved in the league here who take it really, really serious and are very, very professional about it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of contributing factors as to why we have progressed over the years. But there's plenty of people, as I say, who treat this very, very professionally and treat it very well. And for him to be coming over here after only 2 weeks and coming out with nonsense like that, it's completely out of order.
Why come over is the first question I'd ask.
Well, that's the thing, you know. And to be fair, his team are not bad, Reggie. Like, yeah. They've won, they beat Shelburne, they drew a Cork, they drew last night. They have a decent team and they have a chance to get in Europe. I don't know why he's rubbing people up the wrong way coming out with stuff like that. Or as you say, if he doesn't want to be here, go home if it's a pub league, you know?
Exactly. You know? Okay, well, look, your old club Rovers went down badly last night, but Cork have been waiting for some sort of a turning point. 3-0, Turner's Cross. A good victory for them.
Oh, massive victory. And that could kickstart their season now, Reggie, because they have been struggling up to that, as we all know. But I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I felt the lockdown period might be good for Neil Fenn, because it was a chance for him to basically review things and how bad things had gone at the start, and maybe work on some of the newer players that had come in and give him a bit more time to do that. And to be fair, they've picked up a little bit. The one in the cup during the week, albeit with a late goal, but that's a massive result to win 3-0 at home. Give them huge confidence going forward. Very disappointed for Sligo Rovers, because they had won their last two and people were expecting them to go down there and carry on that winning run. But it's a massive result for Cork, and it should kickstart the season out for them.
Absolutely. Bows take on Finn Harps a little bit today. They're trying to track down Rovers, of course. Finn Harps struggling a little bit, five losses on the bounce. So you'd expect Bows to get the result there, I'd imagine.
You would, and for the good of the league, we hope that they win as well, Reggie, because if they're the closest challengers now, Bows, and they've done a brilliant job. Keith Long, as we said many times on the show, he's done an amazing job with Bohemians, and they're the nearest challengers. I fully expect them to go up to continue the good run that they're on. Finn Harps are struggling since the restart, so even though it's a long trek for them, Bohemians, I still fancy them to go up there today, this afternoon, to give it to 2 o'clock and get the job done. And as I say, hopefully for the league, because we want some sort of a title race. Shamrock Rovers, the form they're in at the moment, nobody can see anybody stopping them. And I think they'll probably win it. But you would like to see some sort of a race. You don't want to see Shamrock Rovers running away with it with 7 or 8 games to go. Like, there is only 11 games to go, and they need to lose 3 out of those games. I can't see that happening, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But hopefully Bows can just hang on their coattails for as long as possible and make some sort of a race of it.
Yeah, Shelburne and Derry both struggling. Not great form for either of them this season, but it'd still be, they're only 2 points between them in the league, so it should be a cracking match later on today at 5 o'clock in Shelburne.
Yeah, Shelburne need to pick up points there, because they've struggled in the last couple of weeks as well. They had a good start before lockdown, but they've struggled the last 2 or 3 weeks. They just need to get a point out of that, to be honest with you, Reggie. I think success for Shelburne, as I've said many times this year, just needs a week and establishing themselves back in the Premier Division and build from there. They don't need to be setting themselves any unrealistic targets of Europe or anything like that.
Yeah.
Derry, on the other hand, had a good result last week. And then they had a really good performance against Shamrock Rovers, and they were lucky not to get points out of that. So they're in decent form after they had a really bad loss to Sligo Rovers the first night. But the last couple of weeks have been a bit better for them. I think Derry will beat Shelburne, to be honest with you, Reggie, today.
Well, tomorrow then, of course, sees the league leaders away to St. Pat's. That the rivalry there will be something else. I know Rovers are going so well at the moment, but Pat's will give them a good battle.
Yeah, it's the game of the weekend for me, Reggie, because I think Pat's, as I mentioned to you last week, that there's a lot of potential there with that group and that squad, and hopefully Stephen O'Donnell can get the best out of them, because it needs to happen with St. Pat's. As I said, for far too long now, since their success under Liam Buckley, they've been weak, really. And yeah, it should be a good game. Like, there's no better motivation than playing against probably the best team in the country at the moment, Shamrock Rovers. So that should give them plenty of motivation to do well, and hopefully it is a good game. It's hard to see anybody stopping Shamrock Rovers, but who knows? Pats might take a point off them, Reggie, but they're very, very strong, Shamrock Rovers. The quality all over the pitch. As I said, they're in an unbelievable run of form. Even though Dundalk are slipping up, they're still just concentrating on themselves and looking after their own business, which is all they can do. And that's exactly what they'll do tomorrow as well.
Absolutely. Well, last week you said you fancied Bayern Munich to take the Champions League, and nobody really disagreed with you. But after last night, I think they're now firm favourites. Quite an incredible performance by them, but what's going on at Barcelona?
Yeah, there's trouble, Reggie. I fancy Bayern strongly, to be honest, because I'd watched Barca a few times, albeit Messi, the genius that he is, but he can't carry them on his own, and defensively they're so weak. And I just felt with the form that Bayern were in, they're so strong going forward, and they're so strong all over the pitch, but particularly going forward, that I just felt they were going to cause all sorts of problems, and that's the way it panned out. I didn't think it'd be 8-2, but I did think they'd score maybe 3 or 4, because they're so, so strong. I turned it off at half time, to be honest with you, Reggie, because it was over and I got onto the snooker.
Yeah,
and I heard your chat with Ken earlier as well, and I agree with everything. That O'Sullivan, he's a genius, but he's not for me. Just the way he carries on and all, I just can't be having him. You know, there's no respect or no class out of him ever.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's a genius. Everybody loves to watch him. I love to watch him when he's in full flight. Those last three frames are the best three frames you'll ever see.
Mm.
But the stuff with the snookers and him smashing the ball around the table and not caring and all, like, that's totally wrong, you know.
Yeah, I know, a big snooker fan you are, and I was the same watching it. I've always felt that, you know, I just feel that he doesn't love the game the way every other player that goes out there and plays it does. He just does it as a job, and some people don't like their jobs, and he seems to be
The one where the snooker was 15-14 and he could have hit the pink and he just walloped the white around the table and more or less passed it in.
Yeah, but I mean, I watched his interview.
15-14, like in the semi-final of a World Championships, you know?
Yeah, I watched his interview afterwards on Eurosport, and he said, he came out and he said, look, I'm not getting into this taking 5 or 6 attempts to get out of a snooker. He says, I've better things to be doing. And as I said to Ken, if better things to be doing, go and do them. I mean, it's the World Championship.
That's a shocking comment, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can imagine all the players who'd love to be in that position, you know, and they'd battle all day and night if they were in snookers just to obviously fulfil their dreams. I know he's won it 5 times and all, but with his talent, he should have won it 10 or 12 times if he applied himself. And I know he's a genius, but I'm not all that side of intensity. You love to see him playing, and we'll never see anyone like him. But, like, before the tournament, he was given out, he doesn't want to play in it. We're like lab rats and all. Well, don't play in it, you know?
Yeah.
There's always something with him. And I know he makes the headlines and he brings up all the stuff Ken said, I agree. But I just don't like the way he carries on.
You'd wonder sometimes if Barry Hearn wants him making these comments just to keep snooker in the headlines.
Yeah, and to be fair to Barry Hearn, like, he's made snooker unbelievable in terms of the amount of tournaments there is now, the amount of opportunities for all the players playing every week. It used to be a closed shop, which is the top 16, and it was very hard for anybody to make a proper living. There's opportunities now every week, and of course Sullivan didn't like that either.
Yeah.
He says, no, I'm not travelling around all the different tournaments and every week and playing, and so I don't know.
You'll have to start a snooker podcast, Alan.
Yeah, I don't know. You have me ranting already.
I have to let you go. Great chatting to you as always. We'll chat again next week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Take care. Now, that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Unfortunately, thanks for listening on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106. But thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producers, Paul Morris, Blaine O'Hara and Laura Berry. Robbie Fogarty is up next. We'll be back again next Saturday. Stay safe. Have a great week.